From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Now, you may have heard or you may not have heard, but in the last few minutes it's been announced that the devolved government of Northern Ireland have met and agrees that in Northern Ireland this lockdown will continue until at least March 5th. When will people finally stand up to this tyranny?
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
March 5th in Northern Ireland, eh? Welcome to the programme. How you doing?
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
As the brilliant publisher of the Trends Journal, Gerald Celente, will be back on the programme from Brooklyn, excuse me, from Kingston in New York in the second hour. Love, Gerald. Looking forward to hearing from him for the first time in 2021. Before that, the Irish journalist John Waters returns to the programme yesterday afternoon. Well, yesterday morning, really. John Waters and fellow journalist Jim O'Doherty appeared before the Court of Appeal in Dublin. They are challenging the state's refusal to allow them to challenge the constitutionality of the lockdown. You don't want to miss John Waters. He's on the programme this hour. And as usual, you can tweet me. I'm BBG Richie. It's BBG Richie. I cannot retweet you, and I can't do anything else on there because I'm banned for the time being. Okay. I'm not making a big meal of that. I don't care, as you know. And I'm not a truther, and I'm not a martyr. I don't care. But I'm letting you know why I don't respond on Twitter. It's because, well, I can't. I can't at the moment. Lovely. Hey, I had a funny thing happen to me last night. I was out and about briefly in the neighbourhood, in the hood here in Salford, and a car pulled up alongside me very quickly and a man jumped out. Now, that's not a nice thing to happen, is it? At the best of times. And the man jumped out and he came at me with his arms out wide. And I thought, what the feck is going on here? But it turned out to be Zahir. Zahir lives in Blackburn and he was in the area because his cousin, God love him, has got kidney problems and he's in Salford Royal Hospital. Zahir is an avid listener to the Richie Allen Radio Show and nearly crashed his car when he saw the big body gammon, that's me, standing on the footpath. So without giving any thought to the cars that might be behind him, he screeched to a halt and hopped out of the car on the road and actually gave me a big hug. And that was all right. I didn't mind that. So I had a lovely chat with him before he drove away in Blackburn. And he's asked me to come for a curry with him when in Blackburn when we get back to normal. And if that ever happens, I said I would be happy to do that. So Zahir, how you doing? I hope you've had a good day today. Thanks for the nice surprise last night. It was nice after a while. But I did get a bit of a start. I got a bit of a start, so I did. That's the second time something like that has happened to me. Listen, I'm not bigging myself up now. This isn't self-praise or anything like that. But about 4 or 5 months ago, in roughly the same area, a guy stopped a bus. A bus driver stopped the bus, left his passengers on the bus. I might have told you. Jumped off the bus and crossed the street to say hello to me. So that was nice as well. Now, a document was being shared on social media overnight. A World Health Organization document. I was going to write an article on it for the website, but pretty much anyone who is likely to listen to this programme has already seen the document, and I knew I would be talking about it on the show today. Anyway, no need for me to write an article about it, but it's very important. A document, World Health Organization Information Notice for IVD users, published last week, the 13th of January. And it's an instruction to governments. Listen up, this is very important. It's an instruction from the WHO that when asymptomatic people test positive for COVID with the PCR test, they should be tested again. Asymptomatic, means there's nothing wrong with them. But yet they test positive for COVID. They should be retested because of the problems with the PCR test picking up old bits of virus in your system. Very important, this. The document also advises taking caution on the cycle threshold. Because as we know, because of learned guests who've come on this programme, the PCR test isn't specific for COVID-19. The inventor of it said it shouldn't be used to diagnose people. Okay, so you're swabbed, and the swab should be amplified no more than 30 times. But it's being amplified many more times. Many more times. We know that about the UK, for starters. Okay, the cycle threshold here is 40. And that's no good. It's picking up old bits of cold or flu in your system and telling you you have COVID when you don't and there's nothing wrong with you. This is a big story. Julia Hartley Brewer on Talk Radio wanted to get into it today. Let's hear her describe exactly what I've just told you for those listening who might not believe me. Julia Hartley Brewer, Talk Radio Today.
Can I also ask you about a document, a World Health Organization directive that went out last night? Interesting timing. It was publication of something they'd actually agreed 7 days ago. But basically, in summary, it's written in obviously rather complicated speak. In summary, it basically says that if someone does not have symptoms of COVID, but they have a positive COVID test under the PCR testing, they need a second test to confirm that they have COVID. Otherwise, they do not count as a COVID test, as a COVID positive. They also told the people providing the test they must provide the CT value, so the number of cycles that you go through. Even Fauci in America had said, if you go above 30, 35 cycles, basically you're just catching old fragments of virus. You're not catching someone who's got the infection now, who could be infectious to other people or get ill themselves. I asked Gavin Williamson about this, just whether they would follow these World Health Organization guidelines. And he said, well, they'll be looking at it in the science. But should there not be more pressure that if the World Health Organization says that someone without symptoms, with a positive test from COVID, from a PCR test, we're told is a gold standard, is not a COVID case unless that is confirmed with a second test, should we not be retesting every single person who gets a COVID test in this country to see, and they actually use the term false positives and concern about that in this document, that we should actually be checking that we are actually measuring the right thing when we come to COVID cases in this country?
She's asked the question to Ian Duncan Smith, former leader of the Conservative Party and former Work and Pensions Secretary. What's his answer? Because this is groundbreaking stuff, really. No other news network in the UK today, at least in the mainstream media, has taken up this story of the World Health Organization recommendation. So let's give credit to Talk Radio. What does Ian Duncan Smith say? Should we retest everybody?
This is in this country?
All of them?
Well, yes. I mean, if the WHO is making this statement, then I guess that all the scientists have to at least follow it. And we know anyway, even without this note, we've known for some time that the PCR test is actually very inaccurate and that people, whilst it will say that you've got signs of COVID, what I think a lot of scientists have said for some time now is that the reason it tests and gives you false positives is because it's picking up, as they describe in there, the kind of debris of someone who may have had this and defeated it through their own immune system. And that's what it's also picking up. So this is why I think if they're saying test again, then I think that's absolutely what we should do.
And on the very same programme, Julia Hartley Brewer put the same question to Graham Brady, 1922 committee chairman and lockdown skeptic. Should we test everybody, especially people who have no symptoms of anything, who are told they have COVID? And by the way, that's most people. Most people who have been told your PCR test has come back positive, most of them do not even have a tickle at the back of their throats. That is a fact. What does Graham Brady say?
Well, I think that makes obvious good sense. And sometimes the World Health Organization does come out with some really sensible things, like the fact they say lockdown should be a last resort. So it has throughout this crisis been a problem. And it's a problem, I think, partly in the media as well, that positive test results are described as cases. And of course, normally in the medical world, cases are people who are ill and need treatment. So I do think it's important we divide the two questions. at the moment, we know there are a lot of people who are ill in hospital, and there's a lot of pressure on hospitals because of that. And that we can recognise at the same time as saying, but let's make sure that we are testing accurately, that we're using the best possible diagnostics to work out whether people genuinely are infected with COVID, and that that in itself might have some benefit in restoring a better kind of sense of balance to the argument and helping people to perhaps be a little bit less afraid than they've been made over the last 10, 11 months, because so many people think that the dangers of COVID are considerably greater than they are. And I say that again, like you, I'm stressing, I'm not seeking to dismiss the dangers of a very nasty virus.
Absolutely not.
But I think people often, they see these figures pumped out on the BBC News every day.
On the BBC News every day. We can leave that there. You know where he's going with that. Yes, the public has been fooled into thinking that cases means sick people. I know this to be true. I have heard from people when I've been out and about on my business in Salford, one or two people who don't like me very much and do not like this radio show very much have said to me, the cases, the cases, the cases, all of those people, hospital, the cases are not sick people. They're not. The vast, vast majority of them are people with no symptoms whatsoever. The PCR test is worthless. And now the World Health Organization has said, you really need to retest these asymptomatic people again and be careful with the cycling and the amplification of the swab tests, of the swabs. I mean, it's just astonishing. A mild talk radio is speaking of this, and it's only Julia Hartley Brewer. Her colleagues don't seem to give an arse about this huge story, because it is huge, even though it's a week old. But I only saw the document last night. Hartley Brewer's production team only saw the document last night, like everybody else. Nobody's talking about it. In fact, worse than that, Piers Morgan and his pal Susanna Reid on Good Morning Britain on ITV prefer to bring idiots like Devi Sridhar or Sridhar on the programme. Devi Sridhar. She's an American who these days is the chair of global public health at the University of Edinburgh. She's a fishwife, constantly demanding more and more and more lockdowns. We're really struggling now, she said. Christmas is to blame.
Yes, definitely, because we know the virus spreads when people mix, and we know people were permitted to mix over Christmas. And the difficulty for the public, you can't really blame people, is if the government says it's safe to mix or go mix, people trust that. It's like turning on your water in your home and drinking the tap water. If someone says, do the water safe, you're going to drink it because you trust the standards and regulations. And so it's tragic. I mean, it's hard to get your head around this level of death. I mean, it's like four jumbo jets flying out of the sky. It's 70 times more than the Manchester bombings. It's we're not seeing the faces and hearing the stories.
It's 70 times more than the Manchester bombings. Let's give Devi Sridhar a bit of a rest there. What rot, they would say that. What rot. They love that in England. Well, the Enid Blyton generation. Right, Deputy Chief Medical Officer Jonathan Van Tam, bit of an Egypt. He of the football analogies. Well, it's a penalty shootout and we've taken two penalties and both have hit the back of the net, so we're doing well. The media sickeningly gushes over him. They love him. Oh, he's great, isn't he, Jonathan Van Tam? And they've made him such a celebrity now. Listen to this silly news story today. Everybody carried this. Everybody.
The mother of England's Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Jonathan Van Tam, has had her first coronavirus vaccine dose. 79-year-old Elizabeth Van Tam had the jab at a GP surgery in Whittlesey near Peterborough. Professor Van Tam said he was delighted his mum had received the vaccination, urging others to take up the offer as soon as they're called forward.
Hey, put this in the rundown. What? Jonathan Van Tam's mammy has had the vaccine. Or get it in the rundown quickly.
Fuck it. What kind of fuckery is this?
Yeah. It's fuckery, all right. Hey, do you want to giggle before we move on? Do you want to giggle? Hi to Debs, who sent me a clip from YouTube, which is very funny. And it's a clip about COVID speak, learning to speak in the era of the pandemic. Remember back in... at the very beginning of this plandemic, this scamdemic, they told us all sorts of stories about speaking too loudly could spread the virus. They said choral societies were killing members by singing too loudly and all of that garbage. Well, last month, it seems, maybe a bit longer, somebody who I've not been able to identify put a very funny video on YouTube. Please help me identify this gentleman so I can at least credit him. He put a very funny video on YouTube about learning to speak during the COVID pandemic, changing the way we speak during the time of the pandemic. Do you want to hear this? It's good. Some scallywag has added a laugh track into this. I've not done that, but anyway, look, we need it. We need all the laughs we can get. Thanks, Debs, for sending me this. This is very funny.
Good evening. As COVID-19 infections remain high at home and around the world, scientists have found that the virus is being spread not only by coughs, but also by people talking to each other.
Yeah.
Studies show that consonants project the virus for much greater distances than vowels.
That's true.
And certain consonants, the so-called plosive sounds,
plosives,
are worst of all.
Worst of all.
You get on
each
us all
time
the time
a person
that.
Makes the sound p, t, or k.
Okay.
They can project the virus up to three times further than when they use softer consonants, such as f.
There's a high school project that found that out.
Based on this new evidence, the government is introducing new rules in stages to make people's speech less dangerous and slow the spread of COVID-19.
I knew this was coming.
Yep.
Announcing the new rules, Health Secretary Matt Hancock said, during the first stage, or tier one, the consonant P will be banned and must always be replaced with the softer sound F.
Yes.
Anyone speaking to other people in a public place will have to stop using the plosive sound. Failure to do so could lead to a fine or even prison. The whole population, even members of Parliament, will all have to flay their fart in this. After a period of a few weeks, we will move to Tier 2. Tier 1 rules will continue to apply. In addition, the sound T will be banned and must be replaced by the sound N.
No.
Although this may cause some initial confusion, for example, Nietzsche's in schools will face challenges when Nietzsche-ing the Nenheim's navel, we are confident any problems will be temporary and measures under Nianu will help nurn the nide of this pandemic. After a further brief period, we will bring in Near 3.
Near 3?
The rules under Nears 1 and Nu will continue, with the addition of the sound K being banned, to be replaced by L.
Oh.
We have considered these measures carefully, in line with recommendations from professors at Lambridge University.
Lambridge!
These new rules will apply not only in English, but also no other languages spoken in this country, including Nurlish, Folish, Portuguese, and Inalian. I urge people to Neep Nam and Narion. Together, we nanonka the COVID pandemic and renern the normality in no name and all. Thank you.
Now that is good. That is very good. Thanks, Debs. Appreciate that. Right, it is exactly 21 minutes past the hour with the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is live. It's always live from Salford here in the Northwest. We haven't been flooded. Dr. Vernon Coleman very kindly inquiring as to the well-being of the future Mrs. Allen and the big baldy gammon today. Are you under water or are you doing okay? Thankfully, in Salford, we're all right here. I know the Irwell has burst its banks in Manchester, but not here. And I think maybe in Ramsbottom as well, maybe, but not here. So we're not doing too bad. And as somebody who had no choice but to get a mortgage 18 months ago in Salford and start that whole cycle of madness, what I would have had anyway, I have great sympathy for people coming to terms with flooded downstairs, flooded houses, flooded front rooms. It's a dreadful thing. It must be a horrendous misery. It really must be, especially now in all of this madness as well. I know in South Manchester, Didsbury, there's been problems, Northenden, and I'm well aware that in Sheffield, some parts of Yorkshire, South Yorkshire, they've had a lot of problems as well. Good luck with all of that. Right, John Waters is standing by. I know that because he's waved at me. We'll have a tune from the Box Tops. We're going way back with this. All right, back in a minute. Give me a ticket for Yeah, 1967, Jean Anne, good old Jean Anne. Jean Anne's a good egg, has been mucking out today in Connemara, mucking out the pony, mucking out pony. 65 or 66, she said it's actually 1967. I didn't know. I looked it up at the speed of light. 24 minutes nearly past the hour. It is Thursday's programme. It is the 21st of January 2021. Now, you probably know that John Waters and Gemma O'Doherty, two Irish journalists and very good journalists, appeared before the Court of Appeal in Dublin yesterday, challenging, basically challenging the government, challenging the authorities' refusal to allow them to challenge the constitutionality of the pandemic, of the lockdown laws. I made a mess of that, didn't I? You remember that Gemma and John were refused the right to challenge the constitutionality of laws introduced by the state over COVID. So yesterday, their appeal began, their appeal to allow them to challenge the constitutionality of such laws. Let's welcome back to the programme brilliant Irish writer, journalist, author and broadcaster, become a bit of a friend of ours, John Waters. Welcome back to the programme. How you doing, John?
Thank you very much, Richie. I'm pretty good, pretty good.
Lovely to hear from you today. And I'm going to be honest, a good number of yours and Gemma's supporters got in touch with this programme through Facebook to say to me that I should mention, including a woman called Fionnuala Murphy, to say that outside the court yesterday, your supporters were obviously not allowed in because of the so-called restrictions, but they were bullied, attacked, and some of them were very roughly arrested by the Gardaí. Before we talk about the appeal, what do you know about that? Were the Gardaí heavy-handed?
Oh, yeah. We discovered this when we came out. As we were coming out, news trickled through to us that this had happened. And we had gone in at about 10 o'clock in the morning, and there was an incident at the gate. The atmosphere was unusual. It was not what we had been used to. It seemed to be quieter from a police presence point of view. But when we got to the gate, having made a couple of speeches outside, I'd spoken to our followers and supporters and people who had turned up, we approached the gate, and there was a barrier around it, which I hadn't seen before. This is the pedestrian gate in. And there were a couple of Gardaí there. And one of them said to me, well, which of you are going in? And we had been promised that a number of the public, the gate, because the principle of the Irish Constitution requires the presence, that the doors of the court be open so that people who wish to go in may go in up to the, I suppose, a certain capacity. And we had been told by the registrar in the court the day before that 9 seats would be allocated to the public. Now, that's not a huge amount, but it's a symbolic, I suppose, number. It's at least a representation. So the guard said to me, first of all, he said, well, have you people with you for your papers or whatever like that? And I said, well, we have, but I said, there's also an issue of public access. So he said, well, no. He says, we're not letting anybody in. And he said, who are your people? So there were two, myself and Gemma, and two others who were helping us, including my wife. And then I insisted. I said, no. I said, there's a promise that apart from that, that there would be 9 people allowed in. I said, and then he said to me, after a little bit of to and fro, he said, oh, can you, well, okay, well, do you want to make a list of the people that you want to go in? You see, that's a trap, Richie.
Yeah. Yeah,
because that wouldn't be public access. You see, the question is not our supporters. The question is that the doors of the court are open on a first-come, first-served basis. And I said that to him, I said, well, we're not letting anybody in then, you see, back to the... So then that we were there now, the time was beginning to tick away, and we really had to move on and in to get to the courtroom in time. So we had to more or less leave it, but they were absolutely adamant. And we went inside, we spoke to the registrar and told us he was baffled. He didn't know anything about this. But there was nothing we could do at that point. And so we proceeded for the day. And when we came out at lunchtime, it was very quiet. We noticed there was nobody at the gate. Normally there would be some people. Well, the weather wasn't great anyway, so we didn't take that much notice. And then we discovered later that what had happened was that You see, these, like, Richie, it's very important people get this, because the corrupt media will try and spin this to make it look that we're rough, you know, we're a whole lot of roughhouse people there supporting us. Absolutely the contrary. These were like the saltest of the earthiest people you would ever want to meet. Like they were, like when they were being attacked, they were actually singing hymns and saying the rosary. Now, I don't know what the hell this country has come to when that's what happened. And that happened a couple of years, weeks ago as well at RTE, at the television station, when there was a protest about a terribly blasphemous and offensive sketch that went out on television over on New Year's Eve. And again, the same people on their knees praying, being dragged out, all ladies, being dragged out by these thugs, so calling themselves policemen. So the same thing. Apparently about, I believe, 8 or 10 police vans arrived suddenly without any provocation, arrived at the place, and these guys poured out of it and they just attacked and started dragging people away. And there was, you know, they stormed down the quays onto the spot at the gate where the people were assembled, and started arresting people, arresting for without any context, there was absolutely no aggression of any kind, no fighting, no abuse, no throwing any objects, nothing you could possibly remotely describe as a public order incident. The only thing they were being told, oh, you're outside your 5K zone. And for this, you had ladies being dragged away into vans, including one woman who's is a disabled woman with a crutch.
That's sickening. Can I ask you a quick question on that? That's a sickening thing for me to hear. Forgive the interruption, but it's important. I'd like to ask you a question. The 5 kilometre zone. I put an article on my own website this afternoon, and it contains a quote from Matthew Paul, who's a barrister here in the UK, and he says, the rule of law is being seriously undermined by COVID-19 regulations. Guidance is not law. In most cases, an individual is entitled to ignore it, he says, but police officers are enforcing guidance as if it were the law. Now, that's the UK, of course. So, again, forgive the interruption, but this is important. Does that bear out in Ireland? Is this 5 kilometre nonsense just guidance, or is it enshrined in law now?
I've noticed a shift. There's a number of shifts here, Richie, which we need to get to, because this is one of the shifts. Because for a long time over the course of the summer and autumn, they were pulling back from all this. They were forcing them first, and then we up exposed them as completely lacking in any legal basis.
Yeah.
They said then started telling us they were advisory. But now they've brought in a new twist where they've added a penal provision. I don't know what kind of loophole they've discovered, but they are claimed to have discovered. But they've slapped on the spot fines of 80 or 100 euros, right, for this, that the guard can administer there and then, which is, of course, completely unconstitutional in Irish terms anyway.
Yeah.
But the guards are now saying this sequence, well, when you respond to them that this is not the law, this is not law, it's regulation. They say, oh, there's a penal provision which we're directed to enforce. Now, I cannot tell you, Richie, in having studied that in any great depth, if that is actually has any basis, but I cannot believe that it has, any more than any of this has any basis. But again, pulling back from that and looking at the woods as opposed to the trees there's, you see, the whole thing, Richie, as you know, I mean, it's mind-boggling when you think about it, leaving aside for a moment that it's about the flu, or what you might think about that.
Yeah.
The idea that we have descended in 10 months from a country where citizens, under the protection of the Constitution, as written on their passports, that they have the right to go, that their government of Ireland requests that they be permitted to go where they please, in effect, right? We have gone from that to being essentially a police state, literally a police state now, because yesterday what happened, it was the guards who decided that those people would not go into the court. I don't know why, by what authority, I don't know what the mechanism was, what the hierarchy was, but ultimately now it seems operationally guards are making those decisions on their own.
They can do what they want, and that's what Matthew Paul said about the UK. That's exactly what he said, that the police are using guidance, or even guidance that hasn't even been issued, just making it up as they go along. Yeah. And yeah, horrendous.
I think, see, how will I describe this, Richie? It's quite a surreal thing to try and get. When we came along yesterday, we had to get our papers. There was one error in one of our booklets and that we had to get fixed in the print shop, which isn't that far away. And we were four of us were together, myself and Gemma and my wife and this other gentleman who's been helping us in different ways. And we were walking down with all this baggage, like massive books of stuff, like, you know, the book of authorities and books of pleadings and books of whatnot.
Yeah.
And we came upon the scene, the people, our people there, or, you know, the people who had come out. They're not necessarily supporters. They're certainly not protesters. They're objectors, certainly. They're not protesters, because protesters is a word designed to make them look like, to sound like they're being violent and angry and rough and rude and unpleasant. That is the last thing these people are. And so we arrived, and I remember I remarked to the others on the way down that things were quieter than they had been in the summer, than when we were last there in this form. And that there were, in terms of Garda presence, that there was vans around and there's a few cops around, but nothing like there was. Like, there was like hundreds of cops there when we were there in April, May. Literally, vans everywhere, squad cars, you name it. But now there was just a handful at that stage. And I was wondering, we were discussing briefly what this might mean. But anyway, we passed on. And as I said, we came to the gate. Now, this thing came out of the blue. But actually, what it tells us is something very interesting, that in the interim, the metaphor I've been using it is like a river that's gone underground, and it goes in a relatively kind of tranquil mode, and it goes, you can't see it then as you cross the landscape, it's not there anymore, and then a few miles down the way it erupts again, and this time it erupts angrily and it's bursting its banks immediately.
Yeah.
That's the sense I have of this, that something fundamental has changed in the interim. And I think it may be a mixture of things. It is certainly some kind of rationale that has been arrived at by the people at the top of the police force, of a Garda Síochána, and whoever their superiors are, if they have now any superiors. But that is based, in my estimation, on what they have met or not met from the public. In other words, the resistance they have met has, in Ireland particularly, has been so low. It has only been us, purely. It has been only our initiatives, whether that be the court thing, the kind of events we might hold. We held during the summer Bunrocht on the beach, which is, we used to go on and talk about the Constitution on the beach in front of people. Of course, Antifa would turn up then and try and wreck the whole thing and start something, you know, that kind of stuff. But what has happened now is something that we've seen. We saw it in London. I've been watching very carefully the tone of the policing in London. What you're seeing there on the streets in the recent lockdown demonstrations, which you have, is the same as we saw yesterday, you know, what happened yesterday outside of court. Like Piers Corbyn being arrested, this kind of thing, elderly gentlemen sitting on the side path. Suddenly, it's very interesting, those cops, they pick on older people. And they just drag them like they're actually, you know, rowdy students, you know?
Is that to scare the absolute bejesus out of everybody who witnesses that?
Yes, that's right.
Because it's horrifying to see that. I mean, if I get dragged away, I'm a big baldy. I'm 6'6" tall. I'm very fit. I'm very athletic. If I get dragged away, it won't look very nice, but you'll think, oh, well, you know, he's probably a bit of an Egypt. But when you see a senior citizen, like there was an elderly gentleman dragged away from the Julian Assange hearing. He came on this program, actually, a man in his 90s. That scares the shite out of you, doesn't it?
It does. And that's the intention. Yeah. You see, well, this is what I'm saying, Richie, that we're now arrived. You know, it's very interesting. Language is very interesting in all of this, because we've been struggling for words for the last 10 months to describe our response to what's happened, because we are incredulous that these things could happen in our formerly free societies. And we've been struggling to find words to describe them. And you know, you come up with things like, you know, it's a fascism, or it's, you know, it's despotism, or it's totalitarianism. Yeah. And another phrase is, it's a police state. And that's kind of like, well, nobody knows what that exactly means. But now we're seeing what it means. It means a state in which the police is completely in control, has no accountability to anybody, least of all the people, and which is intent upon reversing the fundamental principles of common law jurisdiction, which are approximately these, that the people may do whatsoever they please, except that which they expressly prohibit. And the state may do nothing except what the people permit.
Yeah. You know, yesterday, you know, every afternoon I get a deluge of emails from people with information about various things that have gone on. A couple, an elderly couple themselves, were visiting the woman's very, very senior mum in a care home in Bridge End. So you've got two people in their 60s, which isn't elderly, and they're going to visit a woman in her 80s. And the police in Bridge End fine them £60. Now, this is a fact. This happened last week. And there is no law to cover or to protect those police officers. So what you've just said is true. When you have police officers acting of their own volition, when they are not supported by the law, by any law, well, that's the very definition of a police state, that is.
Well, the good news, though, Richie, on that is, with regards to the fine, people have no fear. I know, like, you know, there'll be people who for whom a 60 quid fine isn't a big deal.
Yeah.
But for I know a hell of a lot of people for whom it's a hell of a deal, right? Now, and they're going to be concerned about that. What I say to them this, when you get the fine, you'll recognize the envelope. Just cross out the address and write on it, return to sender, no contract.
Yeah.
And that's the end of it. No contract. Because this is a con. They are duping people into thinking they have authority when they have none. And it's very important that people understand that. But you see, the problem with a lot of this is that what we've been seeing is that when you go into a court, you're invariably dealing with a stupid and corrupt judge who will simply do whatever the guards say. And the word, oh, there's a pandemic on. I mean, when in the court yesterday, a senior counsel for the actual for the state actually said words to the effect that the evidence, we had offered no evidence, but the state had offered evidence. And the nature of the state's evidence was to say that there's a pandemic. And
yeah,
that was a
that's
fact.
That's right.
And
that
became a fact once the state had said it. Once the government had said it, then it became a fact. Now, that's the result that Simon Dolan got in his case, essentially. It's a circular, tautological kind of outcome where you think, well, let's have an argument about who's right here, what the basis of this these measures are. We'll put our case, you'll put our... No. The judge says, oh, no, there was a pandemic on. Like, you're sitting in a courtroom, remember, Richie, which is usually, in Ireland anyway, festooned with placards saying COVID, 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 deadly disease. Yeah. Right? You're sitting in the courtroom. Seats because every one of the seats has this placard on it.
Don't sit there.
And the judge will come up with a verdict saying, well, there was a terrible pandemic. There's a terrible pandemic. And anything the government did has to be accepted as the right thing to do. And I said to the court yesterday, I said, you know, it's like coming in. If I was here on a charge of murder and I walked into the courtroom and everywhere around me I saw posters saying, wanted, John Waters for murder.
That's right. I shouldn't laugh, but you're right. I mean, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these judges think they're being objective. Like, it's a joke. And yesterday the judges weren't even in the court. They were on Zoom screens, a big screen in front of us. And we were the only party in the courtroom, Richie.
That's dystopian shit, that, isn't it? I mean, that is the future right there, isn't it? You turn up. I mean, in the future, you won't turn up. You'll be in a cell and there'll be a camera in front of your face. And this is where it's all heading now.
I'm afraid so, Richie. I mean, like, you see, we said this before, but we all grew up reading Orwell and we did him in school. And you know, our attitude to Orwell was, God, he was a mighty man to be thinking up them yarns, you know.
That's right.
You know, and we know he best based them on communism and all that. But like we thought, we're so smug. Like, gosh, God, sure look at us. Sure, we're far too much crack to be doing stuff like that.
You know what? If Orwell's ghost was conscious, Orwell would be saying, I wish I'd have thought of that. It's worse, isn't it? It's worse, yeah.
It is worse. But this was, I suppose, the sense of, we had a kind of a sense of condescension. Not to Orwell, but to the subject matter, in the sense that, well, that's the kind of stuff that happened in Baluba Land, you know?
Yeah.
But here we are, like, and nobody seems to be able to, either on one side articulated adequately, including myself, and I'm struggling, Richie, because there are no words in the language or the dictionary.
I feel for guys like you and for people like Gemma as much as anybody, and the reason I do that is because you've covered the state, you've covered government, you've covered culture for years and years and years, and you could never have seen this coming. I mean, I never saw this coming. I mean, look, I started doing programs like this some years ago, and some men and women over the years have said that we would end up in a war like this. So, you know, this was on my radar, but I still didn't see this coming. And for people like you, I can't imagine how your head is spinning now. I can't imagine.
This is exactly it, Richie. Like, I remember reading like people like Solzhenitsyn and Vaclav Havel warning that, you know, the West need not feel smug about this, about communism, because they said that essentially, in Havel's words, that the communism is simply a convex image of the West, that the essentials that are in the West already have just been magnified in communism. That's what he said. And on apropos what you've said there, I mean, I wrote a book back in 1991 called Jiving at the Crossroads. And, you know, it's a kind, I suppose I would describe it as kind of an attempt to go into the underbelly of Irish politics and the cultural underbelly, you know, and the tribal divide between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and all that stuff, right? Because I came from a Fine Gael family, but my father had sort of started to drift towards Charles Haughey as I was growing up. You know, he admired Haughey, who was a kind of a Trumpian figure, I suppose, long before Trump. You know, a small Trumpian figure, you know. But now I look back on that book. I haven't read it for a long time, Richie, but I kind of think, what the hell was going on in my head to be treating these guys in general as cuddly icons?
Yeah.
They're actually, there are no words for what they are, these politicians. Like, I'm ashamed of the book in a way now, Richie, I'm ashamed to say.
You can't be ashamed. Hang on, you can't. And this might be the most important thing that anybody has said on this programme in 2021. My listeners often ask me, because of my mainstream media career, they say, Richie, these writers, they must be some shower of bastards. They must all be in on it. And what you're doing now is marvellous. They're not all in on it. You're an honest man. You wrote an honest book because you saw things that way. It's as simple as that. There's nothing wrong with it. And I want my listeners to hear that.
I don't know, Richie, is that exactly right, what you said? Or is it that actually they were as I saw them at the time? That what I was talking about was to the extent that it was chicanery or you know, skullduggery, was kind of small beer. But by God, we've got to the big beer now. Because our country, Ireland, is being sold down the river by the people that we charged with taking care of it.
Well, all of those politicians of that era were collectively responsible for selling the country to the European Union anyway.
They were, that's right.
And they would have known. I mean, Charlie Haughey would have known what he was doing. He would have known that he was destroying Irish sovereignty, and his predecessor and his successors would have known.
Exactly right. While all the time invoking the idea of Irish patriotism and Irish history and Irish sovereignty in order to further his own political career and build his base.
That's the disgusting part. But one of the funniest things I ever heard, and I heard it when I was at one of my lowest debs, a few months back when things were pretty bad, you know, just with lockdowns and all of that, I met an Irish gentleman, a senior Irish gentleman, in a park here in Salford, and he said, if I could dig up Charlie Haughey, I'd give him a hiding or something to those. I'd love to dig him up to give him a hiding or something. We were talking about the European Union, but are you able to retain? Because you're incredibly witty and funny, and you always were when you wrote, when you wanted to be. Have you been able to retain your sense of humour through this madness?
Just about, Richie, you know, just about. I mean, we do get a laugh out of things, you know, but at the same time, there's a terrible darkness over our heads. You know, there's a cloud that kind of we feel hanging down around our shoulders all the time now. I was talking to my wife about this yesterday even, you know, when we came home, you know, that this terrible sense, like, because, you know, we have little ones, you know, grandchildren and all the rest of it. I have a daughter, and we're looking at them, and, you know, they're not clued in because they're not educated to this stuff at all. You know, with the best will in the world, you couldn't be, and they're caught up in it, and some of them caught up in the propaganda. Well, we have two little ones, like, who are only just school, beginning school and all that, and they're the most adorable kids, and we're thinking, God almighty, and this is what I think, Richie, you know, I'm 65 years of age, like I kind of have, my father lived to be 84, my mother lived to be 92, let's say I go halfway between them, 87,
yeah.
Like, I have 20 odd years, right, 22, 23 years, but maybe only 10 or 15 of that will be of any use to me or anyone else. Now, is that enough time for me to do anything to try and stop this? I don't know, because this is pure evil. It is pure evil now what is going on. There is no question in my mind now whatsoever, Richie, that the COVID thing is a complete con in order to affect total authoritarianism in our societies. Yeah. To remove any residual sense people have that they're entitled to be free, that they're entitled to claim freedom, to claim rights, to claim bodily integrity, right of movement, right of free speech, right of public assembly. As I say, there is the reversal of the common law principles, whereby now the principles read something like, the people may do nothing except what the state permits, and the state may do whatever the hell it likes. That's where we are. And that's a terrible country to hand to your children or your children's children. My God, after the beautiful country, you know, like for all its flaws, Richie, Ireland was a beautiful, culturally, a beautiful country.
Amazing place. Amazing.
A very rich place. You know, when you actually could stay in the literature and the music and the fun and the humour, you know, there was no place on earth, as I would say, like it.
It sustained us, didn't it? Everything you've described there, I mean, you're some speaker as much as you are a writer, as eloquent as anybody who's ever come on the programme. It's absolutely, it sustains us, all of that, and now it's gone. Can I ask you this? We're going to go probably till 6:05, if you can stay around with me another 15 minutes. But the reason I want to ask you, are you aware, I know you're up to your tonsils, I mean, this is a massive story, and it's only talk radio, which is owned by, is it Bauer or Global? It might be, it's got to be Bauer, is it, in the UK? The World Health Organization issued a document on January 13th, so that's like a week ago. This is big news now. And it said that, I won't name the document, it's all over the internet now. It basically said that countries should retest anybody who tested positive for COVID, but were asymptomatic. So if you had no symptoms whatsoever, you were hunky-dory, and you took this terrible PCR test, which has basically been, it's redundant and it's been widely discredited, and it comes back positive. The World Health Organization says that test should be done again, it shouldn't be trusted. Now that is the biggest news story to break in 2021 so far. Forget the inauguration and all of that garbage. It's astonishing, because all of these cases, all of these cases they keep telling us that keep showing up, these are largely of people who haven't even had a tickle at the back of their throat. And we know that the PCR test is useless. And would you believe, in this recommendation, the World Health Organization even says that governments should be very, very careful about amplifying the swab samples too much, because that's showing up basically old bits of virus and all of that. This is the key to unlocking the whole hoax. And yet only talk radio, which is a national station, a kind of a conservative, you know, thinking national station here in England, as you know, is the only one to touch it today. It's massive. That's the most frustrating thing for me, John, before you come back in, is that all of that information that discredits and disproves this bollocks, this bullshit, is right there for anybody who wants to see it.
Well, exactly, Richie. I mean, and these are things that we were saying mostly in court yesterday. I wrote up that point myself to the judges, that the PCR test and the numbers, because the other side were using all these numbers like of cases. But actually, I knew immediately that the figures were all, I knew what they were. Like, one of them was an aggregate for all the numbers of cases, all the cases which have happened in Ireland since March, since the beginning of March last year. In other words, 10 months of actual alleged cases. Now, 90% of those would have been false positives. That's one thing.
Yeah.
Another thing is that probably at this stage, 90 to 95% of them have recovered completely. And yet they're using this statistic to scare people with and not telling them what it is. They say, oh, there's 172 cases of COVID. Oh, my God. You know, it's a meaningless figure. And then the same thing happens with deaths. And when you actually break it down, you can actually cut immediately, without any bother, 90% off any figure that they're offering. 90% off the top to actually get somewhere near the truth, or if there is a truth at all to this COVID situation. Whatever this COVID is, and then we produced evidence to show that the authorities here, when asked, were not able to provide us with the evidence that it had been isolated, the virus SARS-CoV-2 had been isolated.
Same here, yeah. Same here.
But still, but now we're to the core of it. You said the media, the media, I keep saying it. I mean, there's no word, they're corrupt. They tell lies for a living. That's what they do. That is their product. That is that is what they produce for the public. That is what they give the public. Lies on behalf of the government, and they're paid for doing it. And they have no problem with that. It seems to me now anybody who's left in the mainstream media now is somebody of no principles, because this is clear to everybody, this is what they're doing. But what they're actually doing with information like that is very interesting, because what you tend to find, and I haven't checked this out now, but this has been the general pattern, that information will be reported, but it will be reported, as it were, on page 7, column 3, at the very bottom of the page. And that's a process what I call, in social media terms, it's known as being ratioed.
Yeah.
When something, and it's the same thing, because what they do is they put it in to cover themselves, and then they ratio it with all this kind of other stuff that's completely fabricated. These pseudo human interest stories and sensationalized allegations about long COVID, and every single death they can find that they can remotely apply to COVID. They'll put it down. I mean, I saw a video the other night of a man who was in a hospital, and his father had just died. His brother had been speaking to his father the previous day. He had a shoulder injury. His brother had been speaking to him the day before, and he was in perfect form. Next thing, he was dead, and they were saying it was COVID.
Imagine.
You know, that nothing wrong with him the day before, and he dies, and the next thing, it's COVID. Like, Richie, I cannot begin. You see, this is the surreal thing. We were in a courtroom yesterday where it was clear. Now, I can't rule out that these people are just lying and they're gaslighting, but the state is telling us things about the pandemic that we know to be untrue. But I can't 100% say, straight looking at somebody saying it to me, that he knows it's untrue. Because the level of lying has been industrial. So I kind of have to give them the benefit of the doubt, or the slight benefit of the doubt, that they actually are sitting in their living room every night watching this shite on RTE, listening to these criminals who call themselves journalists pumping out this junk to frighten people. I know people who are terrorized. Their lives are over, Richie. I know them, and I know people, like elderly people now, who have been so terrorized for the past 10 months that they're afraid to come out of their houses. They're fading away. They're shriveling up. Their humanity is gone. The song is gone from their heart, because they believe these lies. When they could have been out breezing around the country for the last 10 months and not a bother of them. As I said, we were yesterday. I came into this, Richie, having two serious comorbidities. I'm 65, which is on the young side of the vulnerable group, right? But I had two years, one of cancer and one of a terrible condition called Ramsay-Hunt syndrome, which was essentially like having a viral stroke, literally. And it was a real virus, I can tell you, a herpes zoster virus that nearly wiped me out. And I was on death's door for a month or two earlier on in the thing. But I was standing outside the courtroom yesterday about to go in, and I said to people, well, here we are after 10 months of coming around and doing things and kissing each other and hugging each other and shaking hands and living our life to the best of our ability despite all this, and we're still alive, and not one of us has dropped dead. Now, isn't there a message there for people?
In a deadly pandemic, yeah.
We could have been living all the time, Richie, if we'd had the courage to tell those guys to get stuffed.
Can I ask you a question about something you said a minute ago? Folks, I should have done this a few minutes ago. It's unprofessional of me not to remind you if you need to be reminded. John Waters, legendary, and I don't use that word very often. I'm using it today. Irish writer, author of great books and broadcaster. John is on because you will know that the state refused to allow John and his journalism, his colleague in journalism, Gemma O'Doherty, challenge the legitimacy of the constitutionality of lockdown laws, and they're appealing that decision, and that began yesterday, and please God, if there is a God, that some miracle will happen and it will go well. So John is on the programme. You talked about, you know, I'm going to grab that little bit of audio later on and I'm going to put it on YouTube if I can, where you talked about, you know, what it was like in Ireland. And, you know, today they announced that Glastonbury won't go ahead again this year. The fuckers are, they're trying to annihilate the spirit of what it is to be human, aren't they? They're going after the culture, the plays. Jean-Anne Crowley, our mutual friend, great actress, great thespian, great friend, great woman, great Irish woman, you know, laments to me on the phone what they're doing to the theatre, to film, to prose, to writing, to assembling. It's terrible, John.
Yes, it is, Richie. But I have to say, I have no sympathy for the practitioners because they've done nothing. They haven't done their job. What is it to be an artist? Like, what is it to be a writer? To be a writer is to make the truth visible to people.
Yeah.
To you know, like, there's something seriously happened here, and this is a longer story than we have time to, and I'd love to talk about it sometime. What has happened to the art? You know, that the rebel who used to be the rock and roller or the writer or the artist, who stood against authority and against tyranny. Where has he and she gone in the last year? Well, they've been gone for longer than that. Because something radical has happened whereby art has been essentially recruited as the voice of the establishment. And in fact, we've been attacked because we stood up against us. We've been attacked. Now, I have to obviously mention a few names. Ian Brown, Van Morrison, Eric Clapton, Noel Gallagher spoke out against it.
Yeah.
And Van Morrison is, I gather, now taking an action in the north of Ireland against the lockdown, which is an amazing thing. You know, that is what an artist is. That's what a rock and roller is, because fundamentally, you know, a rock and roller isn't just somebody who affects television sets out of hotel room window. You know, that isn't what it is. It's actually to say no to tyranny. Because it's rooted in two very distinct and separate phenomena, which actually are linked in the dance of Elvis, which is, on the one hand, you know, the hollering of the slaves across the plantations to one another, which turned into the blues, and the country music that evolved out of the hearts and minds of Irish immigrants who fled famine to America. And created this music in America, in Appalachia, in all these places. And that music was brought together by Sam Phillips in his back room in Memphis when Elvis Presley sang those first songs in 1953. And that's the tradition that Van Morrison is upholding when he does what he does, when he sings. His latest song is absolutely fantastic. People should really listen to it. It's called As I Walked Out. You can get it on Spotify. You can find it on YouTube for nothing. It's absolutely beautiful. It's an old Irish law air, which I can't identify. People will it's haunting me, and I can't think what it is, where it comes from. But it's an old Irish law, and it's an absolute, because what he does in it, Richie, is fantastic. The hook line is, why are they working when we are not? Beautiful line. But before that, he uses words in descriptions, almost like a piece of journalism, because the words don't scan or rhyme in the melody. But the anger and the grief comes through out of that mechanism. It's the kind of song that, as a songwriter, I immediately, the first time I heard it, wanted to, as it were, to clean up the lines a bit, to shorten the lines a bit, to make them scan better, to get the rhymes sorted out. And then I thought, no, Van is the genius, you're not. Van is the genius, and he's got it. This is it. It's an absolutely stunning song. And it actually makes up for every single one of the venal, cowardly bastards of artists who have done nothing and said nothing for the last 10 months.
Sitting on their hands, apart from the ones you mentioned, I'm going to try and grab that tune and play it before the program is over. I haven't heard it yet. I'm using an online music store to buy it now. It'll be 60 pence or something like that. It's well worth it. By the sounds of it.
As I walked out, it's absolutely gorgeous.
I've got it there. So tell me, in the 5 minutes that we have got then, so you appeared yesterday yourself in Gemma. Where does it go, John? What's the next step then? What happens next?
Well, they have to go off now and consider our submissions and so on. You know, we're happy enough. You know, I mean, look, you end up being happy, and then I've been in court many times for all kinds of stuff, Richie. And there's a kind of a principle. if you want to have a hope of winning, you've got to get a terrible bollocking from the judge on the way, along the way, you know, because when the judge gives bollockings, it's a way of signaling to the other side that he's doing his job, and then he can shaft them, right?
Yeah.
Now, so when you don't get a bollocking, you should be worried, right? And we didn't get any bollocking. Well, we got a couple of small ones, but we were looking for them, you know? But we got one apiece, you know, or, you know, Mr. Waters, I think we'll just leave it at that now, if you don't mind, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, so we were pleased. We were pleased that we were able to put so much on the record. And we were also pleased to note that apart from being obviously obnoxious assholes, the three other barristers on the other side, there were three at big money, of course, were absolutely hopeless. But they don't have to be getting good in a system like that, is the worry I would have. However, we are not necessarily optimistic, but certainly hopeful. And if we don't win it, we're going to the Supreme Court. And we would be even more hopeful there, because we are actually there using fundamentals of constitutional law, points that have never been made before, never raised before, which I think will be of great interest to the court when we get there. Because we've actually found judgments in which the judges themselves are saying very similar things. And that's going to be very interesting. Are they going to find a way of contradicting themselves just because it's Waters and O'Doherty? I don't know. Maybe they will. But we're willing to find out. But the one thing is, Richie, about this, and I keep saying this to Gemma, and we agree on this, that we were set out on last April the 7th, when we started doing these papers, to obviously to try and win the case, obviously that. But we, as much as that, was to create a drama out of which people would be able to see that there was a capacity to resist tyranny, first of all, but also that there was a way of demonstrating to people how bad things were. And that we reckon that in the course of this, we would be, not alone find out how bad things were, but be able to demonstrate it. And by God, were we right about that? So that's, it's a drama of revelation of the extent to which our, this country has been destroyed, our freedoms have been stolen, and the song has been stolen from our heart. But again, Van puts the song back in our hearts, and that's something we should be grateful for. It's a very sad song, a very angry song in a way, in a very subtle way. And it's a, but it's an Irish song. It makes my heart burst with a pride and a sense of, this is the greatest genius we've had in our lifetimes, in Irish life, in Irish artists.
You couldn't have given it a better build-up. I've got it. I'm going to play it out now as we part company. I think you and Gemma, and I'm sure of this, I'm not just saying, this is not just empty rhetoric or me, as we would say, I'm not plum-awsing you. Now, everybody listening to this in England hasn't a clue what that means. I'm not plum-awsing you. I think you've got far more supporters back home than you realise. For a lot of people, they're very reticent to speak out. They're watching on with hope and with their fingers crossed. But you do. Just Godspeed to you, John. And you know that you can come back anytime you want. And thanks for reaching out and telling me. It was nice that you got in touch and said, oh, we've got news. Anytime you want to come on for a chat or to express yourself on any of these issues, this door is always open to you, mate. Thanks so much.
Thanks a million, Richie. Thanks. Lovely to talk to you. Thanks
you
a million.
Too. The brilliant John Waters. And John couldn't have, as I said, given a better build-up to Van's song, As I Walked Out, which I haven't heard, but it doesn't matter. Here it is. Thanks to John Waters. Back with more after this from Van the Man. Yeah, it's a great song, that. I think it is. And I Walked Out by Van Morrison, recommended by John Waters on Thursday's Richie Allen Show. 20, what is it now? It's well, it's 11 minutes past 6. We better get a move on. It's 10 past 6 even. Better get a move on here because Gerald Celente will be joining me live from Kingston in New York City. The great Trends Journal publisher himself will be looking at the top trends for 2021, but also reflecting on the events of yesterday as well. Why wouldn't we? Right now, though, we're off to London, I think. I don't know. It could be New York. I have no idea. For headlines, I'm very well prepared, you know.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Nick Harper. New US President Joe Biden is expected to sign 10 further executive orders on his second day in office, focused on boosting the US battle against COVID-19. It's now exactly a year after the first case of the virus in the country was diagnosed. The new US government has signalled that it intends to join the COVAX vaccine facility, aims to deliver vaccines to poorer countries around the world.
Gerard Salente very soon. Let me remind you that on Sunday morning we'll have episode 2. It should never be called episode 2. Sunday Morning Melodies continues at 10 o'clock UK time on Sunday. It's basically a news analysis free zone. It's me playing some songs that I think you'll like with a bit of chat in between. I enjoyed it last Sunday and I'm looking forward to it again this Sunday at 10 o'clock. And I've got to remind you, because it's very important, the only place to hear that is on richieallen.co.uk. You can listen to it live as it happens. And later on then, it'll be repeating on my stream. But I can't put it on podcast. I can't put it on YouTube because they won't allow it because copyright, you see, because of the songs. I can do it live on my stream because I pay for the privilege, but I can't then put it up on, as I said, YouTube or whatever. So the only place to hear Sunday Morning Melodies at 10 o'clock UK time is on my stream.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Welcome back. Still lots to do on the Richie Allen Radio Show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Still lots to do. Gerald Salente will be with me in a couple of minutes' time. I'm looking forward to that. It's been a busy old week. It's exactly 13 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuned to the Richie Allen Radio Show, where the hell were you? You missed an exceptional John Waters was brilliant on the programme in hour one. Don't forget, of course, you can catch up with everything you missed. Just go to richieallen.co.uk. This is The Hollies. What a tune this is. Long, cool woman in a black dress, The Hollies. Graham Nash on the Richie Allen Radio Show. 16 minutes, it is now past the hour. Drive time, Salford. Right, my guest this hour needs very little introduction. I love the man. He was very, very kind to me when I started doing these types of radio programmes in my Spain days. He publishes the legendary, again, we don't overuse that word, Trends Journal, trendsresearch.com, accurately predicting geopolitical trends and the markets and money trends since Moses was in short trousers. Brilliant guy. Let's welcome back the one and only Gerald Salente, live from Kingston, New York. Welcome back, my friend. And it's a very belated Happy New Year, but it's meant Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. Not very happy.
No, it's not great, is it? It's been better. Let's kick off with, we're going to talk top trends for 2021, of course. Trendsresearch.com, folks. Subscribe to the journal. It's the only publication I recommend. The inauguration. Can you settle something for me, if you don't mind? And if you're bored of this, you know we've known each other long enough now that you can tell me to feck off, as they say in Ireland, in my country. If you're bored of it, don't answer it. Was Trump robbed? Do we support us of any... Is there any credibility at all to the claim that he was hard done by in the election?
You know, I was on a show on election eve and going through and bringing in all the data, and the host was of the shows, and I was commenting on things, and all of a sudden there's like 130,000 spike vote up for Trump. I think it was like in a couple of states, the swing states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and I think it happened in Pennsylvania, one or two or three of them. At least three of them. And 120, 130. And there's a sharp spike up. You're looking at the graphs and, you know, Trump is a little bit ahead and Biden's under him. All of a sudden, a straight line up. And 130,000 votes they counted for Biden in ballots and not one for Trump. You know, what am I, 6 years old? I mean, really. You know, and you go back, they've been rigging elections forever. You go back to JFK, Mayor Daley of Chicago. I mean, ran Illinois. You know, it's one thing. Remember the hanging chads back right. in 2000?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's a corrupt system. And I believe that, yes, I believe that it was rigged in a number of ways. And watching interviews and never getting answers, like them showing in the state of Georgia, where they tell everybody to leave and they finish counting the ballots and the cameras are rolling and they're pulling out boxes under tables that had tablecloths on it and they start counting ballots. I mean, these videos are there. They're not being made up. So, yeah, I believe that the election was dishonest. I mean, Joe Biden, I mean, getting the biggest turnout in American history. Yeah, I mean, this guy's a clown. And again, I'm a political atheist. You know, I didn't like
That's
Trump.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, Trump is a narcissistic freak. The whole system. I call them the Repulsivekins and the Democrats. So I'm not taking a side on this.
That's why I asked you. It's why I asked you, because I know that. It's important for you to reiterate that. Gerald Celente has no interest in Donald Trump. He's no supporter of Trump. Oh. That's why I asked you for your opinion, because I know you'll give me an honest one.
And you know, I was a secretary to the New York State Senate. And I designed and instructed American politics, taught at St. John's University. Yeah, photographs of me and Ronald Reagan. You know, I picked him up at the Chicago Hilton Hotel. I was the number two guy running a major trade association in 1976. This is 2 days before he's announcing he's going to run against Gerry Ford for the Republican nomination. You know, I put on a brunch with him. I mean, I've been around. You know, I know yeah. I've been with princes, prime ministers, and presidents. It's a freak show. You got this. You got egotistic, narcissistic, sociopathic, pathological liars running your governments. I mean, take a look around the world. Oh, do you like Macron? No, maybe you like Johnson. I know that little freak Sanchez over there in Spain's your kind of guy. No, I like Merkel. I mean, look at them.
They're all the same.
Rudy yeah. over there in Netherlands. I mean, look at the crowd. Look at the freaks. These are mentally ill people. Dwight D. Eisenhower, Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces in World War II, five-star general. He said, and he became president in 54. And he said, anyone seeking the office, you could look this up, you could Google it up, of president is either an egomaniac or crazy. End of story.
And they're chosen because of these characteristics, aren't they? Because when the people telling them what to do, when the think tanks and, you know, the Rockefeller Foundations and all these groups are lobbying
oh, yeah.
them, they'll just do what they're told because they don't care. It's like, yeah, we'll give another £1 billion worth of arms to the Saudis. We know that they're raining hellfire and damnation down on the Yemenis who never said boo to a goose, but we don't care because, as you just outlined, we don't have any conscience. We're psychopaths.
Yeah, and again, you know, Trump, you know, a guy, you know, again, a narcissistic freak. And by the way, I had lunch with his brother. Remember, he's elected in 2017, 16. I had lunch with his brother, Robert, who had a restaurant that they were backing this woman not far from where we are over here in Kingston. I was with him for like 3 hours. You know, and if you would have asked me, you know, what was he like? I said, a guy could pass in the street.
Right.
You know, he's like a nothing. You know, nice guy, very nice, you know. But and anyway, this Trump, he played the game and the people bought it. One of the things he did, he had a lobbying rule he passed that said that, let me see here. He created, that created 4 years ago, he said that the time of making, about an hour after midnight, Mr. Trump struck down his 2017 executive order that had blocked administration officials from taking lobbying jobs for 5 years after leaving office. All right?
Of course he did. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. All right? I mean, a low-life piece of crap. They play the game. You know, the Biden administration. How about you got the Obama administration back? I mean, and I'm not making it up. You look at the people he put in there. Oh, you talked about the Saudis destroying Yemen? You know, he brought in as his defense secretary? Oh, a guy by the name of Blinken. Yeah, Blinken. This is the Blinken bastard that Obama, the Nobel Peace of Crap Prize winner, sent over to Saudi Arabia when Saudi Arabia announced they were going to war against Yemen to get rid of them Houthis from Washington, D.C. And under the Obama administration, he sold the Saudis, I'm trying to get the right number, I think it was $90 billion worth of armaments.
And this guy is back now. He's working with Creepy Joe.
Now, Blinken sent there for intelligence. This is at the beginning of that war that started in 2000. It's going on now, what, for 5 years?
Yeah.
And almost 6 years. And Blinken was there to do intelligence with the Saudis. You know what the intelligence was? The United States, part of it, they were refueling the jets from Saudi Arabia on their way to Yemen so they could bomb the hell out of the people. He's back. And by the way, these people call themselves liberals. They're not liberals. They're libtards. They're the furthest thing from a liberal. A liberal is a person that wants everybody to think free, be who you want, and do what you wish. You don't tell them what to be. So Blinken, the Secretary of Agriculture, Valsic, another low-life piece of garbage crap, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, the Secretary of Energy, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Director of National Intelligence, Chairwoman of Council of Economic Advisors, Administration of Small Business Administration, Director of Office of Management and Budget, all past Obama people. Got it? Got it? So you got the same murderous, low-life thieves that you had before, that you have, and you keep having. Oh, well, aren't we happy that Trump is gone? Now we got our other murderous group that we love so much. I'm in libtard land, New York, over here.
This is important.
This is disgusting.
What you're saying there, we put a piece on the website for the radio show about the appointment of Rachel Levine, who's a transgender person who came out of Philadelphia. And it's important that you mention this. We've got the great Gerald Celente live on the line from Kingston, New York. You know who Gerald is, trendsresearch.com. Do subscribe to the journal. It's hugely influential and hugely useful to producers of radio programs like me, accurately predicting trends for many, many years. Now, this Rachel Levine comes in, and transgender woman doctor, and we put a piece on the website yesterday, and people say, oh, you're being bigoted and you're being transphobic. Not at all. The point I was making by talking about it, and I just reported the facts. I know that Buttigieg would be the first openly gay person if the nomination is approved and all of that. Very important what you're talking about there. These allegedly liberal people, they're going to bring in, aren't they, Biden and his administration and Kamala Harris, one of the greatest rollouts of censorship that we've ever seen. I mean, they're all for telling people what they should think, removing, you know, your right as an individual to think certain things about gender identity or about whatever. They're really going to go after this stuff, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Again, liberal, willing to respect or accept behavior or opinions different from one's own, open to new ideas.
Yeah.
That's the definition. These are libtards. They're retarded, arrogant little boys and girls. They, you got to believe what they tell you. But that Rachel Levine, his, her. Listen, did you look at the picture of that
person?
That his, her. This guy got more chins than the Chinese telephone book. And this clown is telling me about health. I don't care if you're a transgender. I don't care what you cut off or put on.
Exactly.
But when you look like you, and you look like this sick-looking freak, and you're the health secretary, go screw yourself. Or maybe screw somebody else. Or get screwed. But don't tell me what to do. Oh, by the way, Rachel, I have an honorary doctorate from the National University of Health Sciences for the work I've done in complementary and integrative medicine. Rachel, my boy, girl, the first book I worked on was Natural Healing in 1986, a Warner book, a big book, when no one was talking about this. So when I see a thing like this, again, with all these chins telling me about health, go screw yourself.
I mean, don't.
Again, I don't give a give a damn what your head is and who you want to be. But when you're this looking like that and calling yourself a, oh, I'm the best and you're the top, go screw off. Get the hell out of here.
What I was going to say was, and I've said as much myself over the years, to be the devil's advocate, Rachel might not be the worst person that ever lived, but it doesn't matter. It's the symbolism, isn't it? Rachel Levine has been chosen because they're planning on allowing people to participate in sports of the gender that they choose to be. They're planning on making places less safe for women. I'm going to say it, for real women, by allowing trans people access these places, including rape crisis centres. This is not funny. This is what we've come to call woke, isn't it, Gerald? We've called it, we've come to use this term woke. This is not woke and it's not liberal. It's fascistic and it's dangerous. And just, I'm not a virtue signaler. I've never have been now. If somebody like Rachel Levine is working in my factory or company and says, would I mind referring to her as she, because I'm, you know, mostly an easygoing guy, I would do that. I'll never believe you're a woman, ever. You're not a woman. I'll never believe that. But look, if you're going to live and let live, and if you're not going to insist that I do this or do that, just out of politeness, I might say she. But that's as far as it goes. I agree with you. This is dangerous stuff, this, isn't it?
Yeah, again, I don't care.
I know you don't. I know you don't.
Gay. Yeah. I could care less who you are, what you are. But when I see a thing looking like this and knowing why he did it and what they're where they're going, That's my anger. That's my anger. When I look at a, and as I said, this woman that she is now, with all those, she's got more chins than Chinatown. All right? Look what this sick guy woman looks like, and you're calling me a health expert? Get the hell out of here.
Fair enough.
And that's what I'm trying to say. Lola, L-O-L-A, Lola.
He's a funny guy. Trends in the News on YouTube and on trendsresearch.com is hilarious stuff at times. Could have done stand-up, Mr. Salente. What are we going to get then? Top trends 2021. Look, it's coronavirus, coronavirus, coronavirus.
China 2021. The American century is the 20th century. China is taking full control. GDP growth. Of all the major nations in 2020, China is the only one that's going up. And they're all basically opened up as the rest of the world locked down. And America, the business of America has been war. Like that murderous, slimy Biden who voted for every war that he've ever loved.
He did.
And the business of China's business. Think about it. We used to make fun of the Chinese because they used to wear their masks, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, now I have a designer mask. I'm all masked. They were wearing them, little boys and girls, because the air is so filthy over there. Only 1.5 million people died last year in China. from air polluted related diseases. 1.67 million died in India. Oh, but we got to watch out for that virus. Hey, you like them pesticides in your food, those chemicals they spray in the air, in the water, in the earth, on everything. You like those artificial flavors, all of those artificial colors and everything to keep the food alive with all that other stuff in there. Oh, that's fine. We got to watch out for the virus. Got to watch out for the virus. China's taken over. It's gone. And then the other big trends that we're looking at, this is the greatest depression. They locked down everything. These businesses aren't coming back. They're gone. And it's the great reset, the bigger getting bigger. Merger and acquisition activities are almost at an all-time high. The little businesses going out because all these slimy, low-life pieces of scum that people vote for have given all the power to the bigs. You mentioned about you saw the cover of the current trend
about big
tech.
Got it here, yeah.
Big tech, in control. You know, no free speech. Hate Trump, love Trump. That these little freaks, the geeks. You know, the King James Bible said, you know, the meek shall inherit the earth. They got it wrong. The geeks have inherited the earth. They censor the president of the United States?
Incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah, and again, I can't stand Trump, but to censor the president of the United States, all right, everybody? All we have become are plantation workers on the global plantation of Slavelandia. The bigs are getting bigger. The Amazon's, that forest isn't dying. It's spreading all over the world. You're not allowed to go out into your bars, into your restaurants, but you could go into Walmart, you could go into Costco, you could go into Target, you could go into all the big stores because they control you. The slimy scum pieces of garbage crap politicians, they take something called that imbeciles and morons call campaign contributions.
Yeah.
Adults call it bribes and payoffs.
Bribes, that's right. Bribes and payoffs. The Great Depression. Yeah, I saw the piece you wrote about Brexit in the journal as well. It was outstanding. You know, in Northern Ireland today, they said the lockdown will go on until at least March 5th. In here, they're saying spring, if we're lucky. And all the while, the World Health Organization has even told governments to be careful with the PCR test because it's giving too many false positives. It's just bullshit.
We've been writing about this
for months. Yeah, months, yeah.
All the data's been there. Look at the freaks that are telling us what to do. Look at the freaks. Look at the freaks. Does anybody have two eyes? Can you see the freaks that are destroying your life? Get back in your house. Oh, by the way, that doesn't work either. Again, we've been writing in the Trends Journal. That other clown boy we have over here plays governor in New York, the dictator over here, Cuomo, a daddy's boy born on third base would be nobody if his father, Mario, was a governor before him. In May, we write about this. They locked down New York, and in May, they found out the data coming in that most of the people that went into the hospital were people that stayed at home. The lockdowns aren't working. The people that are dying, who's dying? The numbers are all there, but people refuse to look at them. And we put the facts in. Over there in the UK, or is it the FU, you know what, K now?
Yeah.
Because that's what they've done to you. What is it, 388 people under the age of 60 died?
That's right.
March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December, January. Oh, what is the average in Canada? These are facts. 70% of all the people that died are from nursing homes. 94.5% of the people that died in the United States had 2.6 pre-existing chronic conditions. Oh, obesity. Oh, it's only 42% of Americans are obese. Oh, only 70% are overweight. Can't figure out why you're dying. I don't know why. Oh, lung disorder, smoking, all of that, respiratory ailments. Average age in Germany, 79 years old. Italy, 81 years old. All right.
82 here, and the average lifespan here is 81. The average UK citizen lives to be 81. The average age of a COVID death, an alleged COVID death, is 82. It's garbage, and yet they're getting away. We keep coming back. The very first time we ever spoke when I was in Spain, so you're talking 2010, it was the media, and nothing has changed, Gerald. They know this stuff, but they won't broadcast it.
They sell fear. That's what they do. Again, we wrote the facts in the Trends Journal. We quoted the guy that's the CEO of CNN, the Cartoon News Network, Jeff Zucker. Well, you could put an F in front of that.
Yeah.
No, it's Zuck. Zuck. Yeah, Zucker. There's Zucker, Zuckerberg. They're all effing us and arresting us one on another. Anyway, he's quoted. The ratings were in the toilet before that. They were down for nothing in February. You go back January, February last year. And he tells his staff the virus is breaking out in China. He said, stay on this. The people are tuning in. And this is a guy, somebody, you know, sent this out to the Wall Street Journal that he was promoting for them to keep this going, to keep spreading it, because it was boosting the ratings. And again, our cover of our Trends Journal on January 28th, remember the virus breaks out in China on Lunar New Year. The cover of the Trends Journal was coronavirus, 106 dead in China. That's and our next line was 1.4 billion still alive.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, what the hell are you telling me 106 people died?
Yeah, spring? Why would you do that? Yeah, the fix was in even then, wasn't it?
Yes, because they could not stop the Hong Kong riots. And we were writing about this when they broke out in 2019. We were writing about it in every week. They couldn't. I was on Hong Kong television continually. And I'm talking to, you know, after you get off the air, you'll be between breaks. You're talking, what's going on? Oh, we're not stopping. We're fighting this. We're not going to let them. We're not going to let them take over control. Blah, 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 blah. Gone. Finished. They couldn't stop the riots. But then when it broke out in the Yuan province, then they locked down a couple of places in China, including Hong Kong. Finito. End of it. Then they passed the security law. Finished. No more protests. Now everybody's locked up in China, in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong's China again. That's it. So these are facts. So anyway, the coronavirus scare has been sold by the media. And as we wrote, they called it the COVID war when it began. You can look up the facts.
They did. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And so what we said was it's perfect. Just as the people marched off to Mussolini, saluted Stalin and Heil Hitler, they'll march off to the COVID war. They believe it. And they did. And they do. And by the way, I'm sick of this crap that I have to wear a mask and get vaccinated. If you're wearing a mask and you're safe, and you got vaccinated and you're safe, don't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
I'm not threatening your life. You're safe. So why are you telling me what to do?
They're gaslighting people, aren't they? They're convincing people somehow that red is actually blue and that green is black. I mean, that's a perfect analogy you just made there. They tell people, you must be vaccinated to protect the population. Well, if the idiot next to me is vaccinated, how could I be of any danger to him?
Exactly.
And yet
exactly.
They convince people of this, don't they?
Yes. And again, you know, my father, may his soul rest in peace. I get upset about stuff. And he look at me and he say, son, he said, take it easy. He said, people have little minds.
Yeah.
He said, only very few. He said, only very few think for themselves. He said, most follow. And again, you look at all the wars, you go back in history from whenever. Every German that I know, and I've been to Germany a number of times, every one German that I know are ashamed of themselves for letting Hitler do what he did.
Yeah.
And now they got Merkel in charge. And what did they do? They put back the same law that they gave Hitler in 1933 that gave him the right to run the place. And now they just gave that back to Herr Merkel, Heil Merkel, rather, several weeks ago. There were protests. And you know what they did? The German military went out there with these huge water cannons and blew them away.
Yeah. the right to govern and the right to make laws without any legislation. It's incredible.
Yep.
And they have it here. Johnson has it here as well.
Yep.
In the 60 seconds, 2 minutes we have left, and thanks again for your time, and I know you'll be back in February. Trendsresearch.com, folks, do consider subscribing to the journal and get it weekly. It's terrific. In the couple of minutes you have left, what is there some sort of light? Is there some sort of note of optimism? Do you see anywhere where something could happen?
Yes. It's time for a new movement. And I'm going to do everything I can to make it happen. And the movement is about liberty, which is freedom, peace, and justice. And people are ready for it. The political parties are a sham in every nation around the world. And we need a new direction. And that's what most people are ready for it. It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men, said Samuel Adams. And that time is now. And I've never seen a better time for a peaceful movement to get rid of the evil people that are running and ruining our lives. That what they've done to young people, little kids freaking them out, masking them up when they're not, was the recovery rate of children 1 to 20 years old is only 99.997%.
Yeah.
Overall, it's 99.8% for the virus. And look how they've what they've done to them and destroyed their lives.
No doubt.
A new movement is ready.
No doubt when you come back in February, we'll talk more about that. Do me a favour as well. Do say hello to Laura at your office. Great ambassador for the journal. Great person to deal with. Gerald, thanks for coming on again today. Have a great rest of your Thursday, my friend. And I look forward to you coming back in February. Thanks so much again, as usual.
I look forward to coming back. And thank you for all that you do. There aren't many like you, so please keep it going.
Thanks so much, Gerald. The great Gerald Celente, my friend, and the publisher of the legendary Trends Journal. Go to trendsresearch.com. Do look for Trends in the News as well, which is incredibly informative and very funny at times as well. And God knows we need a few laughs these days, don't we? Thanks so much to Gerald. It's 14 minutes or thereabouts to the top of the hour now. Debs came back on and she said, Richie, I found the original clip earlier on, the original clip of that funny commentary, that funny skit on how we might all need to talk in the era of COVID, because you remember back in the day when it all began, or shortly after it all began, we heard these ludicrous stories, didn't we? These ludicrous scare stories about people dying because people were speaking too loudly. And we heard that people were dying because they were members of choirs, and singing was spreading the virus and all that garbage. Well, the person we heard, I played a skit that was sent to me by a listener called Debs in the very opening of the programme, in the monologue of the programme. And I'm going to play it again because it's so short and it is funny and it's worth playing again. And if you tuned to the programme late, this might give you a giggle. It's Peter Prowse. And just have a listen to this again. And this time it's without the silly commentary by those American dudes that were listening to it. Have a listen.
Good evening. As COVID-19 infections remain high at home and around the world, scientists have found that the virus is being spread not only by coughs, but also by people talking to each other. Studies show that consonants project the virus for much greater distances than vowels, and certain consonants, the so-called plosive sounds, are worst of all. Each time a person makes the sound p, t, or k, they can project the virus up to 3 times further than when they use softer consonants such as f, n, or l. Based on this new evidence, the government is introducing new rules in stages to make people's speech less dangerous and slow the spread of COVID-19. Announcing the new rules, Health Secretary Matt Hancock said, during the first stage, or Tier 1, the consonant P will be banned and must always be replaced with the softer sound F. Anyone speaking to other people in a public place will have to stop using the plosive sound. Failure to do so could lead to a fine or even prison. The whole population, even members of Parliament, will all have to flay their fart in this. After a period of a few weeks, we will move to Tier 2. Tier 1 rules will continue to apply. In addition, the sound T will be banned and must be replaced by the sound N. Although this may cause some initial confusion, for example, Nietzsches in schools will face challenges when Nietzsching the Nenneim's navel, we are confident any problems will be temporary, and measures under Nianu will help nurn the night of this pandemic. After a further brief period, we will bring in Nia 3. The rules under Nias 1 and Nu will continue, with the addition of the sound K being banned, to be replaced by L. We have considered these measures carefully, in line with recommendations from professors at Lambridge University. These new rules will apply not only to English, but also to other languages spoken in this country, including Nerlish, Folish, Portuguese, and Inalian. I urge people to Neep Nam and Narion. Together, we nanonka the COVID pandemic and renern the normality in no name and all. Thank you.
Distinctively Phil Spector, of course. That's the Ronettes. And Be My Baby on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Thursday's program. Back in a sec.
Thanks to you, the Richie Allen Show is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. Show your support for this unique broadcaster by making a regular financial contribution. Just the price of a cup of coffee each month will make a massive difference. Visit richieallen.co.uk for details.
Speaking of big tech, Gerald spoke very eloquently, as he always does there, about big tech and everything else. I've believed forever, and I wrote about this on richieallen.co.uk today, that basically Google, Facebook and Twitter in particular are Trojan horses. I really believe that. And you've heard me over the years say that they were allowed to grow at the expense of pretty much all of their competitors. They were allowed to, as I put it today, kind of ride roughshod over antitrust laws that were put in place to, you know, to make sure that there is fair competition. They've bribed governments. They've gotten away with murder when it comes to paying taxes. And I believe that these firms were allowed to grow as big as they were allowed to grow deliberately. And I often think I make a comparison with the European Union. And it might sound a bit silly. You might think, well, how can you draw a comparison between these companies and the European Union? Well, we've spoken over the years, you and me, about the cleverness, how fiendishly clever the European Union was to the hidden hand, to the elite that controls or tries to control our destinies and shape our lives. The European Union was always about concentrating power into the hands of a very, very tiny group of people, namely the EU Commission. Very difficult for people who want to control our lives if they've got to individually influence every country in Europe. Very difficult. Far easier if you can create a union, take sovereignty away from all of the countries of Europe, or most of them. Then you're only dealing with a tiny few people, and you can make changes that influence 27, 28 countries. That's what the European Union was always about. Controlling the many through the few. And what I see Facebook, Twitter and Google as being, I see them as being companies that were allowed to, you know, to grow as they have and to develop the hegemony they enjoy now, deliberately, to kettle people, to get us all in the one place, to get us basically sucking at their teats, to be on there 24/7. And most people are on there 24/7 because their phones are by their bedside tables or lockers and they're still switched on. And the phones are still taking notifications from Twitter and Facebook. So I think that, and as I said today, by hook or by crook, Google, Facebook and Twitter wiped out all of their competition. And that was allowed to happen. So that now the hidden hand, the elite, can now take over. And that's what we're going to see in 2021. We're going to see what appears to be a breakup of big technical companies led by governments. But of course, it's not led by governments. Joe Biden couldn't give an arse about Facebook or Twitter. Boris Johnson couldn't give an arse about Facebook or Twitter. Johnson, like his predecessor, Biden, like his predecessor, are just puppets. They're doing what they are told. And that basically is to bring in the sort of censorship that we've talked about for so long. Maybe many of us didn't really believe it would happen, but that's what's going to happen. In the very near future, you won't be able to say anything on any social media platform. You won't be able to offer an opinion or state a feeling unless it aligns with the authorities of the day. And those authorities will be the United Nations, will be the World Health Organization, and so on. That's where it's going. Honestly, I'm not making it up. And I said today, and you're going to see it, one of the big priorities of the Biden first term. But again, don't think that it's Biden's idea. Biden's just a useful idiot, just another puppet like Donald Trump before him. But one of the big things is this attempt to regulate the internet, regulate big tech companies. And this will just be a devastating attack on free speech, free thought, and ultimately internet freedom. And we'll be talking about this ongoing on the Richie Allen Radio Show as the weeks and months go on. Let me give another plug for the Sunday Morning Melodies programme. I'll be back with you this coming Sunday morning at 10 o'clock UK time. And I've got to say this again, please listen. I don't mean please listen to the programme. If you want to hear it, it'll be live at 10 o'clock UK time. If you miss it, the only way to hear it is from 1 o'clock UK time. It will be repeating from 1 o'clock on a loop. And the way to do that is to listen at the Richie Allen website, richieallen.co.uk. Do you understand that? While I do pay my musical royalties, while I do pay, it's a very small fee annually to allow me to play one or two pieces of music in any given talk show, that doesn't cover me then uploading the programmes onto Podomatic or Spotify. They will ultimately delete those programmes, so I'm better off not doing that. Look, thanks to John Waters. If you missed that, do go back and listen to it. Amazing guy. Thanks to him, and Godspeed to him and to Gemma O'Doherty in their appeal. And again, thanks to the one and only, the truly amazing Gerald Celente, who's absolutely on top form today on the Richie Allen Radio Show. I've enjoyed the week. It's been nice not really doing many interviews this week and just chatting with you. It's been a nice thing for me anyway. Going to relax now, I think, with a glass of red wine and chill out for a bit with the future Mrs. Allen. You take care of yourselves and one another. Look after yourselves. Please join me on Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. I will have a bit of crack on Sunday morning. I look forward to that. Until then, the BBG signing off for the week. Bye now. Bye.